Bear Podcast, the podcast for Bears and Cubs, episode 201.
Welcome everyone to Bear Podcast. This is Nard, and I'm podcasting here in the suburbs of Houston. And in this episode, we have a very special guest, a very dear friend of mine. His name is Rowdy Cub. Hey, Rowdy Cub, how are you?
Hey, Nard, what's going on?
Oh, pretty good. It's good to have you here.
It's good to be back on the show.
After how many years? Maybe, I think you were on...
I think I was on episode 89 or 92, something around there. So it's been a while.
Wow, okay. So we're here to, talk about life in the Middle East, stories from that. But first, What we do here in Bear Podcast is we always do some weekend updates.
Uh-huh.
Okay, weekend updates, we talk about whatever we did during the weekend. And you've been traveling.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the one in the U.S. first. So you came here.
I have been traveling. I went from Washington to New York. I was in New York for a week. And then I was in McAllen, Texas. I went to South Padre Island and toasted myself.
Toasted
for a while.
Yourself.
Yeah.
I kind of noticed you have some...
I've been peeling.
You've been peeling.
Over, yeah. And then I was in Austin for a weekend, a very, very fantastic weekend. And now I'm in Houston for a week.
Awesome. Yeah. And you stayed with me since you've been staying with me since Monday.
Since Monday, mm-hmm.
And we've been seeing some friends. Lots of our friends.
We have. We saw Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
Last night.
Shahram.
And tonight we went to go see Johnny Five. Johnny Lee, right? And then on Monday night we went to.
Last Monday we went to the
Asians and Friends committee meeting.
Yeah, it's the Pride Parade meeting.
And saw John and Palima and all sorts of other
and,
fun people.
Yeah. Wayne's listening to this. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Wayne.
Yeah, so, we were talking about the Pride Parade stuff, and I hope we win. You know, for the past 2 years, we've been winning the parade, mm-hmm. You know, best costume or best walking entry, and we don't know what, we'll see if we can win another award this year.
Yeah, this is what John was saying. You don't practice. You just go out onto the in the parade, and somehow you win.
Yeah, that's right. That's how we do it.
So the trick is this year not to practice again. Don't practice.
But there's still planning to be done. Planning, but we don't practice.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, the design you guys have come up with looks really good. I'm certain it will win again this year.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a gay dragon, so we'll see.
A gay dragon.
A gay dragon.
As opposed to a straight dragon.
Well, it was a golden dragon before, and now it's going to be a gayer. So.
Gayer.
Gayer
you can't
gold
get
dragon.
much gayer than a golden dragon.
Okay, so actually tonight, just I want to mention, what we watched tonight is really... It's okay. What did we watch? Forbidden Kingdom. Forbidden Kingdom.
That's right. Forbidden Kingdom.
And, yeah, it's...
Jackie Chan.
It's Jackie Chan and Jet Li. Did Jackie Chan write the script? I think he did.
He may have. Given the quality of the dialogue, it's possible. it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I mean, like I was telling Johnny Five, you know, I think they already made this film in 1984, and it was called The Karate Kid.
Oh, okay.
But it was a good remake. You know, there were definitely some new technologies and effects that were not available to the filmmakers.
There was too much flying, though. Way too much flying. I mean, it's okay if you hit someone and then flies away.
Yeah.
But if somebody's gonna just jump on you, it just flies right there. I don't know. It's Hong Kong Kung Fu. Something like a Kung Fu effect. Or
everybody was Kung Fu fighting in the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a song, right? Okay. Yeah.
But it was a good film. It was a good film. I enjoyed it. Lots of eye candy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily for the bear in me, but visually it was very, very stimulating.
Yeah, it's good. It's good fighting scenes.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's what we did tonight. And actually this weekend I'll be out. I'll be in New Orleans.
I am so jealous. You're going to Jazz Fest.
We're going to Jazz Fest.
I am so jealous. I would love to go to Jazz Fest. I've never been.
We're going
to
see Billy Joel.
Billy Joel is going to sing in Jazz Fest.
Yes,
but he's not really a jazz singer, is he?
No, he's not. It's just that they invite pop singers or standard, you know, the standards.
Is he going to sing jazz music, or he's going to just do his?
He's just
his
do
music?
His fit. Yeah.
Huh,
although it's Jazz Fest, they don't necessarily are all jazz. Mm-hmm. They have saxophone.
It's not all
solos.
Jazz all the time.
Yeah, they had the Dave Matthews Band before.
Dave Matthews Band.
So
yeah.
So it's not really that jazzy.
Huh.
Okay, so we have a topic. We have some topics that's very intriguing. It's always good to have you in the show talking about your travels. Yeah, your travels is always intriguing for me. So you've been to Iraq.
Yes, I'm coming back from about a year working in Iraq. I was there for most of 2007, from the beginning, a little bit before 2007, to just about the end of the year. Traveling in and out of Iraq. And it was a very, very interesting year to be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the beginning of 2007, there was a very big upswing in the amount of violence that was taking place in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But then the surge happened, the troop surge, and things seemed to calm down for a little bit. And that's the way it was when I was finishing up my work there. Things seemed to be calming down. Even I think Americans were looking at Iraq saying, oh, well, things are turning around a little bit in Iraq. But in the last couple of months, certainly we've seen it get a little more dicey again. So that's disappointing. But so it was an interesting year. It was an interesting year working there.
Okay. And you were there for, I think the last time you were on, you came from Iraq also, and you kind of told stories about
it. I was on my way.
You're on your way to Iraq.
I was on
That's
my
right.
way to Iraq.
You're on your way to Iraq, and now you have stories to tell. And one thing that, you know, I'm always interested in is the gay lifestyle there in Iraq.
Well, you know, it's difficult for Westerners to move around the country and to meet folks in Iraq. So, you know, what I observed there is definitely not the whole truth, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Just what Westerners, what outsiders are really able to see in that very, very difficult environment. You know, as a Westerner coming into Iraq and working in Iraq, you always have to travel with personal security every place you go. So it's not the ideal environment to really learn about the people and about the culture there. But I did get to observe a little bit of the culture while I was there.
Yeah. Okay. What can you say about them? It's suppressed, or they hide, or wow, what did they do?
Well, you know, I think what a lot of Americans and Westerners don't always realize about Iraq is that Iraq is really one of the more developed and modernized countries in the Middle East, you know, at least before, say, the 1990s. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, even though as an Islamic country and an Islamic culture, homosexuality is definitely not accepted. It's not part of the family structure, obviously, in the country. Definitely Iraqis, most Iraqis, especially urban Iraqis,
mm-hmm.
From, say, Baghdad and Basra and some of the larger cities in Iraq, have a concept that there are gays out there.
They're a bit more liberal about it, or they just understand, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't say liberal, but, you know, there's a recognition of... You know, Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, was in
oh, yeah, that's right.
New York for the General Assembly last uh-huh. fall and gave a speech at Columbia University, in which he was asked about persecution of gays in Iran, and his response to the persecution of gays in Iran is, "There are no gays in Iran."
There are no gays in Iran.
Well, you know, I think most Iraqis have a recognition of the fact that that there is such a thing as homosexuality, and at least in Baghdad, from the people I've met, the Iraqis I've met who are gay and who lived in Baghdad, there's a very thriving gay subculture. And
but they're
community.
Not out. They don't talk about it, or you can just tell. You use your gaydar or something.
Well,
you can
no,
tell.
I think it's similar to in many parts of rural America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gays are out to other gays, not necessarily to the broader community. Certainly not to their family. But at least before the liberation of Iraq, there was this very thriving gay community, and gays knew who the other gay people. In their community work.
Would there be, how should I say, effeminate Iraqis?
Well, sure. I mean, it's just like
anywhere.
It's just like any place else.
Okay.
There are gay people of all different varieties.
All right. Okay. I wasn't sure. Maybe that's my misconception. That they're all butch there. I don't know.
Not true. Not the case.
Okay.
There's a lot of diversity. Mm-hmm. There's a lot.
Oh,
of diversity.
Awesome. So yeah. I guess there's. So besides Iraq, what else can you tell about the place?
You know, one of the things I'd like to mention, because I have spoken to many many gay Iraqis, is that before liberation under Saddam, I mean, gays were persecuted. Definitely, it was something that that they didn't advertise.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm told that Saddam's attitude towards gays in Iraq was generally ambivalent. I mean, there wasn't a targeting of gays per se. That's what allowed this kind of gay subculture to develop and thrive in Baghdad, at least. Now there are reports that that some gays were surveilled by the security forces and that was used against them. As was needed by the Saddam regime. So, I mean, being gay was definitely not a source of pride for individuals.
You can't just go there and, of course, you can't do a pride parade or anything.
Right, mm-hmm. Certainly. But it wasn't something that was specifically targeted as you might think of in other countries like, you know, in Saudi Arabia or in Iran. You know, gays are routinely put to death by the state.
Oh God, that's terrible.
Yeah, certainly. Wow. Yeah, so things have changed. After liberation and with the emergence of the sectarian violence that we've seen the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
4 years really in Iraq. You know, the death squads that are run by the various militias. Mm-hmm. I'm told by gays who are from Baghdad. Will target gays, will pull
they're
gays
out to get them.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But you know, I don't want to overstate the point. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why individuals are targeted in Iraq and in Baghdad by the militias and by the death squads. Being gay is just one of a variety of issues. And the persecution of gays is a tiny, tiny sliver, although it exists certainly in Iraq today.
Mm-hmm.
It is a tiny, tiny sliver of the larger problem of sectarian violence in Baghdad and in other cities in Iraq.
And you were there for how long? A year and a half?
Going in and out of Iraq for about a year.
Wow.
Over a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, but overall... it was an eye opener for you. I mean, it's a different culture. Of course.
I think anybody who goes into that environment learns an awful lot about the environment, the context, the challenges, and a lot about themselves as well. Mm. Working in that environment. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about with you, Maynard, is one of the bright spots really is that. There is a network of gays in Iraq that work to protect some of the people who are targeted by the violence in Baghdad and other cities.
It's like the Pink Squad, or here.
Yeah, it's kind of an underground railroad, if you will. It's not very large; it's very informal. But I'm told by people who are involved in it that they are able to get some people who. Are targeted by the militias out of Baghdad. This really is mostly a Baghdad-centric issue.
It's more in Baghdad, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are able to get folks out of Baghdad. There are, I'm told, a couple of safe houses in the northern region of Iraq where they're able to get these very limited number of people to so that they can get out of that environment.
Wow. Yeah.
Wonderful,
were you
wonderful
scared
people, wonderful
of hearing
people
all these stories?
Well, not scared for myself, but certainly okay. it has an effect on you to know that this is happening to people.
Yeah, it would be unsettling.
Yeah.
Just hearing these stories. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you would like to add about your experiences in Iraq? Did you date?
Would that I could have. It's just so difficult. I mean, traveling with security is very difficult to get out and really meet people socially. I mean, it just doesn't happen like that.
You can't date.
Basically, without... in the time that I was in Iraq, I was pretty much focused on work, and that was about it.
Wow, you're a workaholic. Just relax. That's why you're here. That's why you're here. You need to relax.
But fortunately, I was able to, you know, I didn't spend the entire time in Iraq. I was able to get out.
Good.
And do some traveling in the region.
Okay, so where else did you go?
Well, one of the places I visited while I was in the region and working was Turkey, okay. Istanbul. I made 3 trips to Istanbul.
Wow!
And it's really it's my favorite place in the world. It is a beautiful city.
Turkey, yeah, hot men.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Indeed.
For sure.
For sure. Okay.
Istanbul. I spent two of the trips I took were almost entirely in Istanbul, and then I made one trip out to an island in the Marmara Sea between the European and the Anatolian or the Asian side of Turkey. But Istanbul is an amazing city. I mean, it is a huge metropolis, people everywhere, antiquities. I mean, these historic sites that are literally hundreds and in some cases thousands of years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture is just so, so interesting. I mean, really fascinating people.
Totally different from your experience. Well, I guess your experience from any other Middle Eastern city you've been to.
Yeah, so far. I mean, okay. I haven't been that many places.
Oh, I thought you went to Bahrain. I remember you went to Bahrain.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
you were in Bahrain.
Yeah,
before.
I mean, there's no comparison. Bahrain is you know 750,000 people. Total, okay. It's about the size of Washington, D.C.,
oh, okay.
Both in population and in area. So I mean, it's a tiny, tiny place.
So comparing it to Turkey?
Turkey is massive, and yeah. You know, and it's a culture that has come in contact with many, many other cultures and has influenced many, many other cultures. So, I mean, you know, there are Christian influences there. There are Muslim influences there. There are mystic influences there. Mm. There are ethnic influences that come from the Arabs. There are ethnic influences that come from Eastern European cultures. I mean, it's just kind of a crossroads for a lot of different cultures.
Southern Baptist?
I didn't run into a Southern Baptist okay. while I was there.
All right. I was just wondering.
Interestingly. Not, I'm sure they're there.
Yeah,
but
somewhere there.
I didn't meet any.
Okay. Mm-hmm. okay. So, how about the gay culture there? This time in Turkey.
Yeah, I mean, it's like any other country in the Middle East. There is a thriving gay subculture. It is not apparent on the surface, although there are. You know, Turkey is a self-proclaimed secular country.
Mm-hmm.
It is Islamic in that the people who live there are Muslim, and there is definite conservative trend in society. But the state, the government, is formally secular. So there are no, there are gay bars there, and they can be gay bars openly. There is, of course, the famous bear bar there called Tekyan.
Tekyan. Oh, okay.
Which is right off Istiklal.
It's a real bear bar.
It's a bear bar in in Istanbul.
Okay.
Yep, all the bears are there.
Oh. Yeah, I remember.
And they're friendly too.
Oh, I bet. I remember you talked about you getting together some bears in Bahrain this time.
I did. Yeah.
This time, there's one in Turkey. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to get the bears together in Turkey. They're all there.
They're all there.
Basically, you open the door, walk outside, and they're there. It's a wonderful place.
Okay.
And there's a group of guys there. There's one in particular, a good friend of mine named Ahmed, who is organizing bear events in Turkey. Actually, he's organizing one he had one in March. He really wanted me to go, but I couldn't.
Well, he has to postpone it until you arrive.
No, he's not waiting for me. He's not waiting for me. He's going right ahead and having his fun. And it was wonderful. I saw the photos from it. It was a fantastic, good time. He's planning another one in July.
There you go.
And I hope that I'll get to go at least for the weekend for that event. But I can give you the website if you want to learn more about...
What's the website?
It's called istanbulbear.com.
Istanbulbear.com. We'll put the link on the website.
For sure.
So
for
people can check it out.
And that website is in English.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
There are other websites that talk about the different bear events, and of course the website for Tekyon Bar. If you do a Google search on Tekyon, T-E-K-Y-O-N, you'll find the website for the bar. It's in Turkish, but of course you can see all the pretty photos.
Okay. Yeah. It sounded like Tekyon, like, you know, Star Trek thing, but anyway.
Tekyon.
Tekyon.
Tekyon. It's Tekyon.
Tekyon.
Because the O has an umlaut over it.
Oh, okay.
So it is Tekyon. It is a natural O sound. Stop practicing. I don't know what you're practicing, but whatever it is, stop.
Okay, so that's... what did they do? Okay, have you ever attended one of those events?
Not in Istanbul, not yet.
What did they say? What did they do? Pool parties or what?
It's basically bar night. I mean, there are a couple of bar nights, and yeah, they go to the bar.
That's the bear run. Go to the bar.
You spend time during the day going to look at the Blue Mosque and the Hagia Sophia and the Hippodrome. I mean, these are the big tourist sites in Istanbul. But there's a lot to see in Istanbul that's beyond. Just the regular tourist sites. There's a huge, really wonderful park north of the city called the Bulgarian Forest. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to the beaches, I mean, there are beaches in Istanbul, but they're, you know, because it's a city and it's a port city, they're not very clean and they're just not very pleasant. But if you drive a little bit up the coast, you can go to the beaches on the Black Sea, or if you take one of the high-speed catamarans, you can go to the Princess Islands or to the Marmara Islands.
What have you done there? Have you tried those?
Well, I'm not going to tell you everything I've done in Istanbul.
Oh, okay. Hot. Let's talk about it off air. How's that?
Okay, later.
Okay, later off air. Later. Okay, so we talked about the gays there in Turkey and gay bars and, you know, Istanbul. Mm-hmm. Istanbul.
What is there to do in Istanbul?
What is there to do? What else?
I will tell you what there is to do in Istanbul. You have to go to the Turkish hammam,
Turkish bath. Right.
This is a wonderful experience. I've been to several Turkish baths in Istanbul, but actually the best one I've been to is in Amman, Jordan. So I'll tell you about my experience. The Turkish bath.
Okay.
My experiences there. I mean, this is not a gay thing to do. This is a thing that you do for yourself to kind of relax and.
So going to a Turkish bath is not gay. It's just really for you to relax.
It's for you to relax and enjoy your time. Now, you know, the baths have been around since the Middle Ages, even before the Middle Ages. And this was a kind of a community center for the men in the community to get together and discuss politics while having a bath. And certainly while in the nude.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly while in the nude.
Talk about politics in the
nude. Talk about politics, talk about, you know, family life, talk about anything that's going on in their lives. It was a community center where men would go to unwind and share in camaraderie and friendship and enjoy themselves.
Do they hug in there?
No.
I don't know.
Now, I'm told that there are hammams where they hug. But I've not been to any of those.
All right.
They hug. Yeah. So you go, what you do when you... what you do when you go to the hammam is you go inside and you sit outside the main room, which is called the hararet. You sit outside the main room and you kind of relax for a little bit. You talk with your friends. You might smoke a shisha. Mm-hmm. You'd have some tea or some Turkish coffee. You might play cards or play some game outside and just kind of sit and unwind for 20 minutes, half an hour. Then you go and change, and you put a wrap around you. It's not exactly like a towel, but you put a wrap around you. And you go inside and you sit in a steam room, a very, very hot steam room. and it softens up your skin and opens up your pores.
Nice.
And gets you ready for what's about to come.
Oh! okay.
So after you've gone through this steam room, you sit there stewing for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes or longer if you want to. Mm-hmm. You can go in like a hot tub or a jacuzzi for a little bit and soften up a little more.
And then, soften up a little more.
And then you get a scrub down. Now, in Turkey, what they do is they take these huge nets and they soak the nets in soapy water.
Okay.
And then they take the nets outside the water and let all the water drain out, but there's still some water in the net. And then they fly it over their heads so that it kind of brings out the suds. And then they wring out all of the suds from this net onto your body. Now you're laying on your back,
naked.
You're wearing this.
You're wearing that strap thing, towel thing, but it's not really a towel.
It's not a jock strap.
It's not a jock strap.
it's a towel.
It's a towel. Okay.
It's like a towel.
So it covers your crotch and your butt.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Just making sure.
Sure.
Okay.
Just checking, right?
Just checking.
So you're laying on your back on a very, very hot stone or piece of marble.
Okay.
And then the guy who's gonna soap you up takes this net and kind of wrings it out so all the suds kind of fall on your body, and then scrubs you with these mitts that
I heard
are rough.
They scrub it with the rough thing, but it's really hurt. It really hurts how they scrub
you. Well, it depends how you do it. Now, the ones that I've been to in Turkey were a little light, to be honest with you. I mean, they kind of rub you down and that's it. The one I went to in Amman, Jordan was fantastic. And let me tell you, I mean, the skin comes off you.
Oh, you lose weight.
You do. And the guy in Amman who I always go to for the scrub, his name is Suleiman. He'll take your hand while he's scrubbing you. He'll take your hand, he'll pick up your hand, and he'll have you rub like your leg or your belly or something so that you can see how much skin is coming off.
Oh, bro.
He wants you to know that he's doing a good job.
What if you're hairy? Like you're hairy. So what's going to happen? Did you lose hair?
Not usually.
Look at all the hair on the floor.
Just kidding. Remember, you've been through the hot tub and the steam room. So your skin is
already all soft.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all
They've primed you. But let me tell you, Suleiman, he picks up your arms and he scrubs your arms and he picks up your leg. I mean, this is not a gentle experience. Like, you are laying there on the hot stone and you are at the mercy of this man who is scrubbing you from head to toe.
My God.
And he scrubs your hair and everything.
Hot.
Everything.
Oh my God, that's so hot.
You just kind of give in to this experience.
Okay. Do you sometimes, you know, just not moan? Oh yeah, don't do that. But when he scrubs you, does it hurt? Like you said, you're pretty light.
I mean, it doesn't hurt, but, you know, you feel it.
You feel it?
You feel it.
You sometimes, okay. Easy, man.
I'll tell you what. You know, after you get the scrub, you go and take a shower in very cold water.
Oh, that's so bad.
You take a shower, and then you usually get a massage, a rub down. Oh. And, you know, that can be a painful experience. That can be a pretty painful experience. You sit on, again, you're laying down on a slab, and the guy kind of pummels you to death.
Oh my God! do they give happy endings?
No.
All right. It's just wondering.
I'm told. There are places you can go.
Okay.
They do that, but I certainly have not been to any of them.
All right. Okay. Just making sure. Just asking.
Just checking. All right. That's
okay.
Fine.
That is awesome.
It's a wonderful experience. Now, the place that I go in Amman, Jordan, I've been several times, and they know me there because I'm an American guy.
They already know you. Okay.
Not many Americans go, but I'm like the American guy who like sort of speaks Arabic. So they remember me. I've been there, you know, maybe half a dozen times or so. So there's one guy there who gives a very good massage. And after I'm done with my scrub and I take my shower, I want him to give me the massage.
Okay.
Because he's good. He's really good at it.
Oh, he's really good.
But there's another guy who wants to give me massage.
Maybe you're his type.
And I don't know about that.
Okay.
But, you know, maybe.
Maybe. We don't
Anyhow,
know.
Anyhow, the last time I was there, he came up to me and he said, When you're finished, in Arabic, he's explaining this to me. He says, when you're finished, come to me because I'm ready for you. I'm ready to give you a massage. Okay. I'm prepared for you. And I was like, okay, well, sure, I'll do that.
Okay.
But really, I wanted this other guy to give me a massage. So I went over to the other guy, and I'm like, listen, I'm going to finish up over here, and then I'll come. He's like, yeah, fine, come. So I went and I got the massage from the guy who I liked. Well, these two got kind of into it. They had a little fight there, right there in the Hararet.
You should have said, boys, come on. You should have said that. There's more of me, okay?
No, I was laying on a marble slab. I was in a very vulnerable position, so I wasn't getting in the middle of that fight. But it's really a very relaxing experience. You spend about 3 hours going through all of these different kind of steps in the process. Mm-hmm. When you're done, you take a final. You've been given a massage and oil, so you kind of take a final shower to rinse off all of the oil. You go and change back in your. Actually, no, they wrap you toga style in these huge towels, and then you go and sit in this
toga style. Okay,
yeah, like you kind of like
yeah you're, toga. You're, mm-hmm.
Yeah. This guy who comes out and wraps you in this towel, and you sit on the floor with these poofy pillows all around in a very cool room, and just kind of they'll bring you a glass of juice, and you just kind of sit there and contemplate existential questions for another 20 minutes or so before you change back in your street clothes
and then you go
head out for the night.
All right, how much in U.S. dollars would that cost?
Oh, the one in Jordan, that's a very, very good hammam, and it costs, in Jordanian dollars, it costs about 20 JD, so that would be about $30, maybe a little bit less than
$30. $30 for a rub down?
It's pretty cheap.
That's cheap, because here, I think people, massage therapists or, masseuse, they charge about $50, $60, something like that. And they're $30
for
the...
And you only get like half an hour or something, whereas this is a three-hour experience.
Wow.
Yeah. The ones in Istanbul, I think, are much cheaper. You can get them for like, $8 or $12. Those are a little bit more self-serve. You scrub yourself, you might get a massage,
You might? Okay.
Yeah.
What if you bring a friend? Like, you massage each other.
I always go with a friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But because it's more fun like that. I mean, men in the Middle East will go in groups to the hammam for things like,
meeting.
We have bachelor parties.
Okay.
Where we'll go to like the titty bar or something. Well, in the Middle East, they will go out to the hammam for the night. Or they would
because there are no titty bars, so somebody's... they just look at each other.
Okay. No.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Maynard, you have one thing on the mind.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. This is like a thing to do to take care of yourself, and you do it with friends. And, mm-hmm. for somebody's birthday, you might go to the hammam.
Like some people, they would... go to have their nails done as a group.
Uh-huh.
Actually, we want to do that one day. Mike and I, as a group with a couple of friends, go to have our nails done.
You're going to have your nails done?
Yeah, and, pedicure, manicure, everything. But anyway, that's us. I'm kidding, guys.
I mean, okay. Women go to have their nails done.
Okay, so you said $30. Not bad.
Yeah, and like I said, in Turkey, I think it would be much cheaper, or maybe in Cairo. I don't know. I haven't been to Cairo, but maybe in Cairo it would be much cheaper. But like I said, that the hammam that I went to in Jordan was a very, very nice hammam. It was very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All aboard! Road trip!
Come on, get on the bus.
Let's go.
Oh, yeah, this is gonna be awesome.
Yeah, let's go.
Take
another
road trip. Yeah. And away we go!
Yeah. Bearapalooza, the original Bear Music Festival, is taking the show on the road in 08 for the Bearapalooza Road Trip, featuring the talents of over 25 bear-identified performers
like Big Nug, Freddie Freeman, Josh Zuckerman, Martin Swinger, Kendall, Michael West, Naked, Ron Morris, Future Villain Band, many, many more.
The Bearapalooza Road Trip rolls through the Northeast May 2nd through May 11th, making stops in
Boston, New York, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Raleigh, with special event performances at Bear Trek in Rye, New York, and Bears on Liberty Weekend in Philadelphia.
Visit www.bearapalooza.com for details on all the shows, the artists, videos, sponsor information, and much more. Be a part of the Bearapalooza Nation.
Woo! Yeah!
Woo-hoo!
All right, we are back. And we still have Rowdy Cub here. Hello again, Rowdy Cub.
Good to be back with you, Leonard.
Okay. So as we're doing laundry here, and I hope you guys don't hear the washing machine, but we've been talking here about airplanes. Okay, we were just talking about it, and like tomorrow I'll be flying to. This weekend I'll be in New Orleans. I'll be flying. Mm-hmm. I want to share a trick that I found. Okay, guys, there's a bug on the Continental website. Okay, there's a bug. If you used to be an elite member, meaning you had so miles, or you have enough legs in the year that they award you a elite status, meaning you can board the plane early, and what else do you have? You have a chance to be upgraded.
This is for frequent flyers.
Frequent flyers
who participate in the Continental One Pass.
Yep, that's right.
Program and fly a whole hell of a lot in 1 year. You get to be silver elite status.
Yes, or that's true.
Gold elite or platinum.
Platinum, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Platinum elite status. I had silver elite status 1 year.
I had silver elite status.
It was a wonderful thing. I got free upgrades to business class.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That happened to me before because since you fly international too, mm-hmm. I would fly. I flew to the Philippines before, and I also got bumped to. I could get bumped to first class because I have elite status. Yeah,
wow.
When you fly to the Philippines, not going to the Philippines. When you go to the Philippines, you get so much miles that you fly a little bit more, and then you become elite status, and then you get to reap the rewards of being an elite status. Anyway,
yes, membership has its rewards.
Mm-hmm. That's
yes.
right. Okay, so what happened? Now, I'm not elite anymore. However, when you print your boarding pass on your from your email or from the browser, when you go to the Continental website, they still say you're elite.
I can attest to the bug in the website because this has been happening to me this year as well.
Okay.
All of my boarding passes say that I'm elite member, but in fact, I have been stripped of my crown.
That's
and
right.
I am no longer
you cannot
elite
be bumped anymore. So mine does too. So whenever I print it out, it always says elite. But yeah, the same as you. So I went to the counter, to the podium, and one time I asked about this because I asked for a print copy, a boarding pass from the podium, and then they gave me one with no elite status, and then said, it doesn't say here elite, but my printout says it's elite, and then the lady said, let me check. And then she found out that, sorry, sir, you're not an elite status anymore. Oh, but how come it says, then just use that. Then just use your printout. From that time on, I guess I'm using the bug.
Yeah, I had an encounter with a very surly Continental ticket rep at Newark Airport, actually. Very similar thing happened to me. Okay. I was trying to upgrade. Because, you know, on Continental, you automatically get elite status for the flight mm-hmm. if you buy a full fare coach ticket, a Y-fare coach ticket. Even if you're not elite status because you are silver elite or gold elite
yeah.
or whatever,
mm-hmm.
if you buy a full fare coach seat, you're first in line to get a free upgrade to business class. So
yes.
And it said so on the website, and I tried to put my name on the waiting list, but the website wouldn't let me. So when I checked in for the flight, I checked in the elite line, and of course I didn't have any problems checking in. But then when I asked if I could be on the wait list for business class, I had a very surly mm-hmm. Continental ticket rep put me in my place. She did not have her coffee that morning.
Oh
yeah,
snap snap snap.
That's right.
She was so okay. So what did you do?
Oh, nothing. I just sat in the exit row. It was fine.
Oh,
I was happy.
Poor bear.
I didn't get a champagne toast in the morning.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. What is today? Today, actually, we're recording this on a Thursday.
Uh-huh.
It's actually my cousin's birthday today.
What's your cousin's name?
Bianca.
Bianca.
Yeah.
That is an amazing name.
Yeah. She's in the Bay Area. She lives in... Uh-huh. The San Pablo area. So, Bianca, happy birthday.
Happy birthday,
you
Bianca.
You might be listening to this because I spoke to her this evening
uh-huh.
On my way home. And she
and
said...
Did she ask you to mention her on the podcast?
Well, she just said that she's been listening And she's on episode, she's catching up. She's on episode 196. We're on 201 right now. And it's just funny. I mean, well, she,
so she listens to the podcast.
She listens to the podcast.
Now, is Bianca lesbianic?
Yes, she is.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Good for her. And of course, she lives in San Francisco. That's awesome.
Sorry, so Bianca, I just outed you.
So, does Bianca know she's a lesbian?
Yeah, maybe. I think she does.
You just outed Bianca to herself. what does she think of Beardom? Now, I mean,
she's very accepting of it. She actually is interesting. She actually gave me the a tour of the gay bars there in San Francisco.
Oh God, I thought you were going to say something completely different.
Oh no!
You're like, she actually gave me a tour, and I'm thinking of what possibly could Bianca the lesbian have given you a tour?
Okay, so she actually showed me some of the bars, like the Eagle, Stud.
Bianca the lesbian took you to the Eagle.
Exactly. We're talking about back in 98 or 99, okay? 99
oh, wow.
or 2000.
Okay. All right, yeah. So this is like, you know.
Yeah.
This is a classic period for the Eagle.
Yeah.
San Francisco.
This is way back then. Wait,
by the way, does Bianca 2000? Call herself Bianca the lesbian?
No.
Is that how she signs her checks?
No. She doesn't.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Just Bianca.
Like Dora the Explorer, you know?
Yes. No. No.
Okay.
Like,
Just checking. Just
okay,
checking.
Just, okay, good.
Carry on.
Okay, let's move on. So,
so you got your introduction to big gay San Francisco from Bianca the lesbian.
Yes, that's right.
Well, happy birthday, Bianca. You have played a formative role in the life of the Nard.
She changed my life.
Nard has never been the same since.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have here a topic by, well, actually it's posted by Sluggo Bear. It's Mikey from San Diego. It's about Earth Day. So it's I wanted to talk about it because if, you know, even if you don't believe in the so-called global warming, it's hard to deny that we are choking our planet Earth.
To death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Earth Day was just last week, wasn't it?
I thought it was 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. So one of the points here is like, let me see. Is it really that hard to buy a few reusable grocery bags? Would you rather be paper?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of Americans have basically got religion about the problem of global warming and of environmental conservation in general in the last couple of years. It's really been interesting to see, even, you know, just in the last, I think, two and a half years, what an important issue this has become. Mm-hmm. And what's even more interesting than that is how it's brought Christian conservatives and liberals together. Have you noticed this?
Yeah, that's right. I understand.
You know, many Christian conservatives and evangelicals are beginning to view the environment as kind of a custodial issue. You know, in Christianity, part of the task of being a good Christian is to take care of God's earth, right? To take care of God's creation.
Yep.
And protecting the environment is a very important thing to Christians in that respect. So there's a little bit of a schism in the Republican Party right now between
they're
those
being involved already.
Right, okay. Right. So you can see there's this, like, you know, there's a little uncomfortable marriage between the environmental lobby and
between the liberals and the conservatives
and some conservatives. Very okay. interesting mm-hmm. to see. But on the subject of environmental conservation, your question is it difficult to buy some reusable?
Is it really hard to buy a few reusable grocery bags?
No, it's not hard.
You should do it.
It's good. But on the other hand, you know, I have some reusable grocery bags. I do bring them to the grocery store when I go shopping. But I also ask them to pack some of my things in paper, and I use those paper bags for different things, to cart things back and forth to work. I also use them as trash bags. Different things. So, you know,
I use plastic bags as trash bags. Mm-hmm. Most of the time. That's how I recycle mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, but the trash bags, the plastic trash bags, are not biodegradable.
But at least Whereas you reuse the paper, them. It's like, yeah. But you are reusing them as much as you can. Mm-hmm.
You are reusing them. That's good. That's a good first step.
Yeah.
It would be better if you reused a biodegradable material.
That'd be better.
Yes, it would be.
Like paper bags.
Like paper bags. Mm.
Okay. We talked about this earlier. Do you really need to buy that DVD, or could you just rent it? We were just talking about this earlier. So
yes, we were.
Okay. So what do you think of that?
Well, you know, I think the premise of the question here is that if you rented a DVD, you wouldn't be using up all the packaging material.
Yeah.
Right? As if you bought
itself,
a material.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As if you bought a DVD. But, you know, people who buy DVDs, they don't buy them so that they can watch the DVD and then throw them out.
Yeah, that's true.
You keep them. You keep it. Yeah. Or you might sell it. You might sell it on eBay or bring it to
But, you know, one thing better than this is to actually download it. Legally, okay.
Yes, legally.
Download it legally.
Legally,
okay.
Because you know we want to protect the intellectual property
That's
rights
right.
of the
mm-hmm.
filmmakers
so
and the studios. And
just whatever. Download it, and their hard drives are getting really cheap.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so are hard drives okay?
I think people like to have
tangible.
To have material in their hands. You know,
they want a collection.
Yeah.
Like you have a vinyl collection, you have a CD collection, a DVD collection.
Do you have a vinyl collection?
No, I do not. Mike does.
Mike has a vinyl collection?
Oh, yeah, he does. I should get him a turntable for it.
I have a very small vinyl collection. You know, vinyl was like just before my formative
years. There you go.
Years, so
you must let go of them. Let go.
I still have cassette tapes from my youth.
Oh, there you go. Plastic.
I have Thriller on cassette tape.
Thriller?
Yeah.
Oh, I do too. Not now, but when I was younger. I have it.
Yeah, I don't see any problem. I don't think that there is a huge environmental cost to, the DVD industry. Mostly people buy DVDs and then they watch them and keep them, or they sell them to somebody mm-hmm. else who will watch them and keep them.
I don't think
DVDs are really a disposable item.
Yeah. Except if it's really something that I really want,
uh-huh.
a real collection for me, like I have Star Trek, the whole collection of Star Trek Voyager, I would get that, yeah. And, yeah, I would rent, definitely.
I don't think there's a huge environmental savings. I don't think you lower your carbon footprint by renting as opposed to buying, really. Because your rental is going to get, you know, I mean, the rental stores and the Netflix and Blockbusters out there, they have a supply of very popular films that people want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while, the demand for viewership of those films decreases. What are they going to do with the surplus? They might keep, you know, 10% of their initial supply after the demand falls off. But, you know, what are they going to do with all of that surplus? Well, they might sell it. They might sell it to people who would be interested.
Or garage sale.
I don't think that Netflix engages in garage sale.
No, I don't think so.
Marketing. But, you know, that they might actually throw away a lot of a lot of the material.
I'll be bad.
Yeah. So better to buy.
Okay, let's check out the next one. Hold on. Do you really need to leave the AC on for 2 hours while you're away just so it'll be nice when you come home?
I don't need to leave the AC on.
Actually, whenever I'm not home, I usually turn it off. And then when I get home...
Off completely?
Yeah.
Actually, there have been studies done. Unless you're going to be gone from the house for a very, very long time, that's generally not the best... A very, very long time. Like, more than just going out to work for the day.
Yeah, okay.
It's generally not good to let your house warm all the way.
Okay.
And cool it down again.
Like,
I mean, you might raise the temperature.
Put it at 72 degrees, something like that.
Or, you know, 78 degrees.
Yeah. Well, that's too hot.
Yeah. No. But then you come home and you might pull it back down to 72 degrees.
Then right? That's okay.
Yeah.
If you do it that way. Okay. Let me see. Well, when long periods, especially in the winter, I just turn it off. That's it. I just turn it off.
Your air conditioning.
Yeah, air conditioning. And I just use the fans or...
Yeah.
I'm cool with that because it's cool anyway.
It's cool enough with the fans.
Yeah. Okay, when you grab them... Wait, first of all, before that. Could you carpool somewhere? Do you carpool? No, you don't. You drive all the way. You drove all around Houston this weekend. No, we did carpool. You picked me up.
Yes, I picked you up at work.
There you go.
See, I was telling you, I'll pick you up at work. I'll drive you to work. And you're like, no. I have to have my car with me.
Oh, not
see,
during the day.
You have a very large carbon footprint. Actually, I have to say, Houston Houston strikes me as a city with a very big carbon footprint.
Oh, yeah. Everybody here wants to have
Everybody has a car and drives. I don't see... I see public buses, but,
they're all in the downtown, not in the suburb areas.
It's very difficult to get around without... Mm-hmm. And there's no light rail here.
Yep, none.
There's no
light rail. There is one. There is one. It's a very short one. I don't know how much it services people, how much... It helps, but it's just a very short distance. And
so Houston is basically a city that you can't get around without without a car.
You cannot. Hmm. No. Next is, let me see. When you grab milk or bread or whatever from the convenience store, can you turn the clerk down when they offer you a bag? Yeah.
I do that all the time.
Don't give me a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that too. Whenever I get a small piece of something.
Usually I'm running around, I've got a bag slung over my shoulder anyway. So I just say, I'll just throw it in my bag. Now I've gone through stores where they refuse to let me go without putting, like my 35-cent pack of gum in a giant plastic bag.
They do that?
They're like, oh, but this is how we know you've paid for it. Because it's in the bag. Okay. So the next time I go to that store, I'm going to bring the bag that they gave me for my 35-cent pack of gum.
Give it back.
What?
Once you go outside.
No, I mean, no.
Put it in your car and then go back and bring it in.
No, I'm going to bring it back the next time and I'm going to fill it with stuff. And I'm going to say, see, it's in a bag. I paid for it.
That's right. Okay. I paid for it without giving you money.
I'll probably fill it with condoms and lube.
Yeah. Good idea.
See, I paid.
How about condoms?
How about them?
How about reusing it? Is that better? Is that
not recommended?
No, that's right. No,
they lose effectiveness.
Okay,
with reuse, that's the kind of thing you just want to throw it away.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Okay,
the environment will take a few extra condoms. It's all right.
Okay, that's right. Do you need individually bottled water, or could you just use a Brita or filter or water cooler?
I love my Nalgene bottle. I carry it with me everywhere.
I drink it in the bottle. From the bottle, it's easier.
It's no, but it's not easier.
Easier, and I like it. I like it more for me.
And then, what do you do with those bottles?
I throw it away.
Hmm.
So I'm bad.
Hmm. The carbon footprint of the NAR. I think. Listeners should start writing you, Maynard, and telling you that you need to reduce your carbon footprint.
Okay, send your emails to nard.bearpodcast.com, okay?
Yeah, why do you use bottled water like that?
Well, you're the first one to drink them anyway, too.
What's that?
You're drinking them, too.
Of course I'm drinking them. I'm staying here in your house, and that's all you have. But I have my Nalgene bottle upstairs.
Oh.
And if you had filtered water here, I would just fill it up when I go out and
in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Tap water, bottled water.
In most places, tap water is safe, but the problem is it's usually in the Gulf, for example, it's desalinated. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't taste very good. It's a little briny. And so most everybody, even locals, we'll use bottled water. I just, I've got a cooler and some extra 5-gallon bottles of water. I just fill up my Nalgene and take it with me everywhere I go.
Wow.
Yep.
Good for you. Well, we're running about 53 minutes now. Oh, it's almost an hour.
It's almost an hour.
Well,
your listeners will become very bored with me.
Yeah, no, you're
I'm
fine.
I'm sure they've already.
Oh,
tuned
no,
out.
You're fine. Okay, so let's greet some people. John. From the Cubs Out Loud podcast from Austin. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, John.
Yeah. Didn't you get to meet the guys there?
I got to hang out with John. We went to Benihana for his birthday.
I thought you said you went to bed. Went to Benihana.
No, that was later in the evening.
Oh, okay.
And then we went to the All Korean All the Time karaoke.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was fun.
All right. Anybody else you want to shout out to?
Who do I want to shout out to? I want to shout out to Ahmed in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. And I want to shout out to Suleiman, also in Istanbul. And I want to shout out to Kevin in Austin. And I want to shout out to Calvin in New York City.
Do I know Calvin?
Maybe you know Calvin.
Maybe I know him. I don't know.
He's a nursing student at Columbia.
Oh, okay.
Calvin thinks that that all the Bears of New York hate Asians.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, some of them are okay.
He says I was in New York last month. He talked to one and he said, "Oh no, Asians. No. Oh no.
Oh no."
I don't believe this, but this is what he said. He said Asians are so 1990s.
What?
Yeah, and in the year 2000, in the year 2008, apparently in New York, it's all about the Latinos.
Oh, okay. There's a.
But I believe that there is love for Calvin out there.
Oh, yeah. Poor Calvin. Well, who am I going to shout out to? Johnny. He went out with us tonight.
Johnny Five, yeah. Johnny
watched,
number five.
What did you watch? Forbidden Kingdom.
Forbidden Kingdom.
Forbidden. No. Yeah.
Forbidden and, Condom.
Forbidden Condom.
Yeah.
Who else? Of course, my partner, Mike. Hi, Mike.
Maybe listen. Hey, Mike.
To yeah.
And, thanks for letting me stay in your house.
Yeah, and we're gonna meet up in New Orleans very soon. Woohoo!
Yeah.
I'm happy about that.
And Alvin.
Alvin.
Alvin, who's letting me stay with him for the weekend.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He'll be the host because you're supposed to stay here all the way, but I have to leave. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you know, you could have taken me with you to New Orleans for Jazz Fest, but no.
But no.
You're going to have a romantic weekend with your boyfriend. I understand. That's fine.
Well, thank you for understanding. Okay, so that's it. Guys, check out episode 200. It's out there. It's just go back one episode before this. This is 201. It's a video podcast. And it's me, Ray, and Wayne. And it was a fun episode. So you guys got to check it out.
Ooh, Wayne is in that podcast?
Yeah.
Number 200?
200. It's also a video.
Is it online right now?
Yeah, you can check it out.
Excuse me, I have to go.
Why?
I have to go check out the number 200 podcast.
Okay, cool. Good for you. So guys, check it out. Go to bearpodcast.com or subscribe by iTunes. Also leave a review on iTunes. You can also call the voicemail line 206-222 Bear. That's 206-222-2327. Leave your voice comments and we will play it in the show. And thank you for all those who left their voice messages for episode 200. That's awesome. We had about 13 voice messages. And if you have comments, email directly at bearpodcast.com.
Are you going to plug my profile?
Yes. What is your profile? Oh, guys, check Rodica Bear. Where can people find you?
I can be found on Bear411 or BearWWW at Rowdy Cub.
That's Rowdy Cub.
Mm-hmm.
You're so rowdy.
If so, you only knew, Maynard. If you only knew.
And watch out. Where's the next one? Where's your next trip?
My next destination is Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Bill's Filling Station. Oh, I don't know if it's open still. I think they moved. Well, thank you, Rowdy Cub, for joining me. Thank you very much. Maybe we can do this again next time.
It's been a pleasure to be on the podcast again. This is becoming a Houston tradition for me.
Awesome. Okay, so say goodbye to the boys.
Goodbye, boys.
Bye, boys. And guys, we'll catch you guys next week. Thank you for listening. Many wolves and many hugs.
Wolf, what a bear.
Podcast your ass.
Wolf, what a bear. Wolf, what a bear.